Welcome to Classical Companion. I'm Diane Jones, and over the next weeks and months, I'll be chatting with artists and arts organizers throughout the region about the music they turn to in these challenging times. Today, I have on the phone with me Travis Newton. Travis is the artistic director for the Syracuse Friends of Chamber Music. He also teaches out at Lemoyne. And Travis, welcome. I know you are just completely swamped with teaching online right now.
Yeah, well, you know, we're making this transition at Lemoyne, as many schools are, and it's just really nice to be able to connect with the students, even though we're over video conferencing. I know that anyone who's teaching online and connecting with students right now can tell you this is not a vacation for anyone. We're all kind of keeping things going, and it's just nice to be able to connect with students, even though it's virtually. So we're happy to be able to continue to do that.
I'm so glad that we do have this technology available now that we can do this. So, yeah.
We're really lucky for that.
I have a couple of teachers in my family, and I know a lot of teachers, and everyone is adapting.
Yeah, well, we sort of have to, don't we? I mean, circumstances change, and we just have to roll with it.
How are you adapting with the Syracuse Friends of Chamber Music? It's not quite the same for you guys as the organizations that employ musicians per se. But right. How are things going with the Syracuse Friends?
They're going well. At this point, we've postponed the remainder of our season. The two concerts that we had scheduled to happen in April and May, we're postponing. I'm working right now with the artist managers to hopefully reschedule those for, sometime when the clouds part and the sun comes through and we can all celebrate getting together in person again. So, but for now, the two concerts that are remaining this year, we're postponing. So,
well, we look forward to bringing those artists back again, and we're so glad to have
Absolutely.
You here to do that and to work on that for us. Now, I'm curious for you, what is it that you look for in music when you're looking to work your way through these challenging times? What is it that speaks to you?
As I was thinking through my assignment from you to think about these pieces of music, I realized that, you know, with our two little kids, a lot of the music we listen to, frankly, is more like Frozen and Disney-oriented, which is not all bad. You know, it's not bad stuff. But this was great because this conversation prompted me to go back and really think about some of the music that means something to me. And for me, a lot of it is about music that I've performed or experienced kind of early on in my formation as a musician that kind of stuck with me. And I realized as I was thinking about these pieces that we're going to share with your audience today that they're all meaningful to me in some way. And so it's not always for me about music that's relaxing per se, as it is about music that is meaningful to me personally.
Well, let's start with the first piece that you wanted to share with us, the Finzi. Tell us about this piece and why it's special to you.
Yeah, so when I was in college doing my undergraduate degree, a really good friend of mine and one of my college roommates performed this piece, and I sort of helped him put together the string orchestra that accompanied him in the piece, and I just kind of fell in love with it. It's, you know, Finzi is not exactly a household name. British composer from the early 1900s, early to mid-1900s. But this piece speaks to me, the beautiful melody. I think it's complicated. I think it's not kind of a stereotypical, just sort of a beautiful melody. There are some real dark undertones, especially toward the end. You think it's going one way, and then it kind of zigs and zags and goes a different way. It was written originally, I think, to be part of a full concerto, but he never quite got to the point of doing that. And so it's kind of a complete journey in and of itself. And your listeners, of course, can draw their own conclusions. It does feel to me that it ends on a kind of an optimistic note, but it's definitely mixed in terms of the mood.
Well, let's take a listen to this, the eclogue from Finzi. I think it's interesting what you were saying about how you're not necessarily looking for music, not necessarily for calm, quiet music, but music that stirs a variety of emotions.
Yes.
Let's take a listen to, well, before we take a listen, let's talk about the Mascagni as well. This is, tell us why this moves you.
This is a piece that I feel just has the right amount of romance, you know. First of all, it's from, obviously, an opera, Cavalleria Rusticana, a one-act opera by Mascagni, and it's become a piece, this intermezzo, that is played by a lot of orchestras in concert, and so it's made that transition from being an opera piece to something that's done quite a bit in concert by orchestras, and I think there are lots of reasons for that. First of all, it's beautiful, it's romantic, but it's also, it is, I think, calming, it sets a scene, it is romantic, and yet it's not over the top. I mean, I feel like it's just perfect in terms of evoking that romantic flavor, but also really showcasing the orchestra and especially the strings, which of course are near and dear to my heart as a violinist.
Let's take a listen. Do you find opera in particular tends to move you, or is it the instrumentation that you really look for?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not really an opera, either an opera conductor or an opera. You know, there are a lot of people in the universe who know more about a lot of things than I do. There definitely are a lot of people who know more about opera. It's not one of my areas of focus. But there's something about the drama. You know, opera, of course, is an incredible combination of all of the art forms. You know, you have theater, you have music, you have the design, you have all of the elements that come together, which is why when you look at an organization like the Metropolitan Opera, it's no surprise that it's the largest, in terms of budget size, performing arts organization in the country, because they have all of these elements. And so for me, that's one of the things that's really interesting about opera itself as an art form. But in terms of the purely musical component of opera, I think there are a lot of pieces that work best fully staged. And obviously most, when you think about opera, you think about the singer as being central. And of course, that the piece that we just heard is without any voice. And so for me, it's just a a lovely little piece that is a nice little nugget that, again, has just the right dose of romance.
Just enough to carry us through.
That's right. Nice bottle of wine with that would be good right about
now.
Oh,
perfect. Absolutely perfect. Put the kids to bed and go get yourself a bottle of wine.
That's right. It's still a little bit on the early side, but, you know, the happy hour keeps getting earlier and earlier in my house. I don't know about you.
So. Well, you have one last work to share with us, and this is the Dvorak. Talk to us about the Serenade for Strings.
Yeah, so when I was, again, in school, speaking of these pieces meaning something to me, this is a piece that I took on as an honors project when I was a senior to conduct and pulled together a whole bunch of friends who were very patient with me as I was just starting out learning how to conduct. And I learned a lot. And you can imagine, you know, when you're learning to conduct something, especially early on, you really dig into it. And so this finale of the Serenade for Strings, first of all, as a violinist, I know, because I've also performed it, it's one of the hardest things to play out there because it's so delicate, and yet sometimes it's really technically crazy. I mean, the stuff that Dvorak wrote in this finale and in the entire piece, to get it in tune and get it together is almost impossible. But in terms of the piece itself, I think it has a little bit of everything. You know, it has this very dramatic opening, and then it moves into a more lyrical section. It has a nice restatement of the Larghetto movement. But to me, again, it has a very clear beginning, middle, and end, with some really fun moments woven throughout that I think only Dvorak could have written.
I agree with that. Let's take a listen to Dvorak's Serenade for Strings, his Opus 22. That's just a marvelous performance there of the Serenade for Strings, and a beautiful piece to kind of wrap up our time together. I'd love to give you an opportunity, Travis, to just talk to us a little bit and give us some words of encouragement, if you're willing, as to what to look for in these times, especially what to look for in music.
Yeah, well, you know, I've done quite a bit of thinking about that myself. I think it's clear right now that people are turning for comfort, for, you know, a little bit of nostalgia, thinking about times before we had this incredibly oppressive virus and this whole situation kind of foisted upon us. And so I just think that the arts are so critical. I was pleased to see that the government allocated some federal funds for the arts, for the National Endowment for the Arts and for the Kennedy Center in particular, to continue to operate. I would say that, you know, if you're a listener to WCNY and you know an artist, reach out to them. It's really tough right now because, as you know, artists work often from one gig to the next and don't always know exactly what's going to happen next. Right now, no one knows what's going to happen next. But that's one of the fun parts about being a musician is you know, any new opportunity could come along at any point, but it's also stressful. And so I would say, number one, support your friends who are artists by contacting them and supporting them in that way. And also support your local arts and culture organizations. They need you now more than ever. They're not necessarily performing right now, but that doesn't mean that they don't need to pay people and keep their lights on. And so do whatever you can to support those organizations.
Well, and it is music that can continue to bring us together. So we want to make sure that, you know, over the next weeks and months, we listen to the music together, and we want to make sure that organizations like Syracuse Friends of Chamber Music are strong and healthy and able to continue the music when we can gather together in reality as well as in virtual concert halls as in the weeks and
well,
months.
Well, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I would say we are fortunate as an organization to be an all-volunteer organization. Other organizations in town have paid staff like Symphoria and Syracuse Opera and many others. Reach out to those organizations and see what you can do to help is what I would say.
Well, Travis, thank you so much. I know that I caught you right after an online class.
No problem. I've been talking too much today. Sorry, you can hear it in my voice.
Well, I appreciate it. And stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you so much for sharing this music with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Diane. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Travis Newton, Artistic Director of the Syracuse Friends of Chamber Music.